Any problems, he goes to Paulie. Trouble with the bill, he can go to Paulie. Trouble with the cops, deliveries, Tommy, he can call Paulie. But now the guy's got to come up with Paulie's money every week, no matter what. Business bad? Fuck you, pay me. Oh, you had a fire? Fuck you, pay me. Place got hit by lightning, huh? Fuck you, pay me.
Episode 30 of the Cut Print Film Podcast is all about the worst movie ever, X's Tens. Here are your hosts, Jeff, Dave, and Chris.
Hello, Mr. and Mrs. Internet. It's me again, Jeff Rollins. And who's that over there?
I'm one third of your host, Dave Costell.
And who's that over there?
I'm three-fifths of your host, Chris Evangelista.
Hi, I'm confused, but we're the Cut Print Film Podcast, and we talk about movies and such.
We sure do, Jeff.
Teehee.
What's the such?
Well, walrus transformations.
Fine baked goods.
What have you.
Politics.
No politics.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So how you guys been?
It's been a while since I've seen you guys.
I've been better. How have you been, audience?
No, they're not going to answer
work.
Us.
Technology isn't there yet.
Not yet.
We don't have butt cheeks we can touch to, we'll get into that later.
Yeah, just for your, be forewarned, today we're going to be talking about David Cronenberg's Existenz from 1999.
Not his best work.
No, so if you want to just listen to the first half of the show when we talk about Tusk, and The Guest.
And The Maze Runner.
Then that's fine with us. You can turn off the second half of the show. Yeah. But if you are a real glutton for punishment, stay tuned.
Hey, we're going to have some things to say. You'll see.
Is that David Cronenberg, the inventor of the Cronut?
Yes. As a matter of fact, it is. I didn't know how to respond, so I just said yes.
What?
David Cronutberg?
Exactly. Yes, David Cronutberg.
All right. So, you saw Tusk.
I did see Tusk.
How was Tusk?
Can we stop saying that word?
Is it about the character of Raymond Tusk from House of Cards?
Oh, God.
No, it's solely about the recording of Tusk, the album by Fleetwood Mac.
Damn,
the not-so-very-good album.
I've always wanted to see a film about that.
No, Tusk,
that
if
is
you
a
don't,
bad word.
Tusk?
Yeah.
It's got a nice hard ending. It's like Tusk.
It's like a German word.
Yeah.
I don't know that for a fact.
Yeah.
Let's just all agree. We're all linguists, aren't we?
Tusk is the latest Kevin Smith movie.
Oh, that guy.
Yes, and if you're not familiar with Kevin Smith, he's
a large mammal.
Yes, that wears hockey jerseys and shorts at all times of the year.
He is disgusting.
Snooch to the niche.
I saw a thing on
Snoochie Boochies and what have you.
I saw a thing on Twitter where he posted a closet filled with his hockey jerseys, and he was like, "See, I don't wear the same one every day." And it's like, that's not something to be proud of, you weird, weird man.
Yeah, that's an odd, odd collection to have.
I feel like he's just stuck with it too long and can't get out
of it.
It's
his thing, like Bono with the goddamn glasses and what's his name? The Edge with that beanie cap.
Yeah. Well,
knock it off. You're 55 years old.
Well,
take it off.
He is an Orthodox rabbi, so that's why he wears it.
That makes sense.
But I think Kevin Smith, he wears those jerseys because it's either that or like a muumuu at this point.
But just put a fucking pair of jeans on and a t-shirt, please.
He could. Anyway, Tusk is a film about...
It's about Kevin Smith's fashion sense, I believe.
Yeah, I don't know why that bothers me so much, but it does. Tusk but I like Kevin Smith.
Oh,
really?
Well, I'll get into this eventually.
No, you won't.
Tusk is a movie about a man that becomes transformed into a walrus by this lunatic old man played by the fantastic Michael Parks.
Right.
The walrus transformee is played by a bowl of vanilla ice cream named Justin Long, who does really nothing for this part. This could have been anybody.
Does anyone
this role.
Like Justin? He's like an actor. I can't picture anyone being like, I got to see that Justin Long movie.
Justin Long is akin to Josh Hartnett, in which he is devoid of charm and personality whatsoever. But a lot of critics are down on Tusk.
Like me, and I haven't even seen it.
Yeah, I think that's most critics that haven't seen it are down on it. But I think that's more of a reaction to Kevin Smith, who hates critics and has lashed out at them in recent time.
I mean, it's hard to separate him from his
very
work,
hard.
It says a lot too, because like I think people are able to separate someone like Roman Polanski.
I was just gonna say,
who raped a girl.
We can separate a man that allegedly raped a preteen girl.
Not even allegedly, he literally did it.
Yeah,
I mean, so.
Yeah.
And but like people have no problem with that. But Kevin Smith, man, he
didn't fit on that plane seat, complained about it, and now he just can't make a good movie. But I think that a lot of that is Roman Polanski has craft.
Yeah, he's really talented, whereas Kevin Smith is just a heaping bowl of turds.
Yeah.
Yeah, Kevin Smith is not exactly the finest at the craft of filmmaking.
Yeah.
But that said, Tusk is worth seeing, in my opinion, just for the sheer spectacle.
Right.
And the fact that this movie is just
so
built around...
spectacular?
No, incorrect. You're twisting my words.
Yeah. That's some Fox News work going on.
Listen,
over
Gospel,
there.
I'll make short work of you.
We already printed the posters. It's too late.
We're going to leg wrestle. I think... The fact that this movie is such a spectacle with the whole walrus idea, like,
right.
what is that about? And the fact that he kind of makes it work is enough reason to recommend seeing it at least once. You're not going to get a whole lot out of this film.
No.
There's not much to get out of the film. Michael Parks does give a great performance.
Yeah, that's the one thing I'm reading consistently.
He's fantastic.
Yeah, pretty much everyone agrees on that.
And have either of you seen Red State yet?
No.
Okay.
Nope.
He's in that. He plays the antagonist in that, and he's absolutely fantastic in that as well, and it's a completely different performance.
He's kind of like Kevin Smith's Christoph Waltz.
Yes, he is.
It's like how Quentin Tarantino keeps using it.
He's not as good as Christoph Waltz, I'd say, but he's not... too far off.
Yeah.
He's really good. He's a fantastic actor.
He's like a great character actor.
Yeah. Very, very, very great.
He'll probably get more work out of this because he's back onto the...
I hope so because he's fantastic.
Right. Yeah, hopefully he'll work with better filmmakers. Yeah. I'll give a shit.
Like Quentin Tarantino.
Yeah.
He just pushes Christoph Waltz
out.
Well,
he is in Django Unchained, so...
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yes, yeah. I forgot about that.
He plays Django.
A lot of makeup.
We saw a different version. You might have seen the Lifetime Network...
I like Kevin Smith, but I don't like his movies. Like, I listen to Smodcast. That's how I knew about this movie. Like, I listened to the original.
Like, I don't want to say I hate Kevin Smith as a person. I hate his attitude about his films. Whereas he thinks he's above criticism. Like,
yeah.
When people criticize his films, he gets like furious at them, and it's like that's their job. It's like maybe you're fucking making a bad movie. Like,
and
I think that's what bothers me. He never takes into account that the problem is him. That's what bothers me.
Right, but I did read a few interviews when I was writing my review of Tusk. I did a little research, and after he had lashed out at critics when Cop Out came out,
right. And of all the films you're going to offend, really, Cop Out.
He makes fun of it now.
Yeah, he has a little bit of self. perspective now,
right.
where he acknowledges that Cop Out was maybe not his niche, you know.
Right. No.
And I mean, he does blame Bruce Willis, but
see, that's another thing that bothers me because it seems like he's just like blaming Bruce Willis.
He said he tried to fit into the studio system,
right.
and he realized that wasn't for him.
Yeah.
So with Red State, which is the film that came out before Tusk, he kind of made his own movie again, and it worked. Red State is really good. And Tusk, while it's not really good, it's still competent.
Right.
This is a batshit crazy idea that he was able to make into a film. It's it's not ridiculous to piece together how this could have come about, the story. I mean, it's a ludicrous story, but it makes sense in the universe of the film. And that's all I ask. There's no Snoochie Boochies. There's no Jay and Silent Bob.
Well, it seems like he's totally deviated from that.
Yeah, thank
let's
God.
Hope so.
Thank
Please.
God.
His whole thing with it was like before he wanted to make movies about like his friends,
right.
so he did. And now with
and
this.
And people loved that. I didn't like it, but... That's what made a name for him.
And
like,
then it got to the point where he was so famous that movies about his friends was just him and Ben Affleck sitting on a couch. It's not a good movie anymore.
Yeah.
So like he got into like the reason he wanted to make Tusk was talking about that story and being like, I want to see this movie, so I have to make it because nobody else is going to make it.
And it's a fun movie. When I got out, the other critics were just standing around, and one of them was like, what'd you think of that?
Yeah.
And two guys said at the same time, I got to spend a little bit of time with this before I can even answer that. And that's how I felt. I felt like I didn't know if it was I gave it a 7 out of 10. And I didn't know if I liked it that much at the time. But after, putting together an outline of my review, I realized there's more to this film than just, it's a walrus, this is crazy.
Right. Yeah.
I mean,
So you had fun with your time with it.
Yeah, you could say that.
Part of the stuff that bothers me about it is, like, and I don't know, maybe it's just me, but I hate, like, the stoner elements. And I don't have a problem with stoners, because I have nothing against smoking marijuana. But,
yeah,
like, the fact that the main character is named Wallace, because I just know when they were writing the script, they were like, you know what's funny, man? Wallace sounds like walrus. And, like, that's the kind of shit that angers me. Because, like,
it's brain dead.
That's funny when you're high with your friends. Don't put it in a fucking movie. Because it wears off.
Kevin Smith loves puns. It's, like, the one thing
And he's
about
not
him.
Good at them. Like, yeah. Isn't there a show called, like, The Nazi Party? Like, yeah. Oh, hilarious. No.
They hammer on that a few times, looking for that big laugh, and it never comes.
Yeah.
There's a few times where the big laughs that you know were expected never came. There's some Canadian jokes that stink.
Yeah.
So, stink.
All right. Well, I think you have to touch on the one thing that every critic I've read has singled this out as the worst thing in the movie, and it is a cameo performance by Mr. Johnny Depp.
Johnny
Depp wearing yet another funny hat.
Johnny Depp's deplorable in this movie. He's doing.
I've yet to see a critic point out that his performance is good. Point out he's like the worst thing in this film.
He's a distraction at best. He's playing, I guess it's his version of Jacques Clouseau.
Right.
He's wearing.
It's like Canadian Jacques Clouseau.
It's a
right?
French Canadian right. Jacques Clouseau. He's an idiot.
I hate it already. Just hearing.
He's got a goofy hat on. I think he's wearing a fake nose.
Yeah, he is. Okay. And it looks like a dick, right?
It's not a good nose. Yeah. He's got a absurdly overgrown mustache. He's just a moron, and there's a 15-minute scene of him just talking, telling a story, and it's horrible. But, you know, you get past it just like you get past the Canadian jokes, just like you get past the fact that the main character, he turns into a walrus and his name is Wallace. Just bulldoze through it and just enjoy yourself as much as you can.
One review I read was saying it felt like Kevin Smith was afraid to cut anything with Johnny Depp in it, and that's why it just keeps going on and on.
It just rattles
Where
on
Kevin, Kevin Smith was just like, oh, I can't cut a big actor like this out of my film. So he just left everything goofy that Johnny Depp did in the film.
I don't think Kevin Smith is a good editor.
Oh, no, God, no.
Well, that's the other problem. I stayed to the end credits, edited by Kevin Smith, and that's all I needed to know.
The other thing is he edits as he shoots, too. Like, that's that night, good. He edits the dailies into,
that makes sense.
Into actual footage, and it's just...
Well, that's why I said this is a guy that not really a whole lot of craft going into his films, but...
Especially for, like, a horror movie, which
it's not
is
a
90%...
Movie.
Yeah, but...
Not even close.
Even though that is what it's being billed as.
Yeah.
It's not. It's absolutely... No. It's a... I guess it's
isn't it just people telling stories most of the time on camera?
There's a lot of stories. It's a nonsensical farce, really. Like it's just a can you believe this? It's Ripley's Believe It or Not. That's all it is.
But is it like The Guest in that it's like being built as a horror movie, like kind of like a?
I think this movie is really built around the intrigue of seeing the walrus. But yeah, I guess there's a tone of dread. But if once you're in the theater, you're not scared.
Not
at all.
Yeah.
So, you mentioned The Guest. I'd rather talk about that.
Well, wait. Chris will be excited about this. Kevin Smith is filming a True North trilogy.
Oh, I know. We're
tied together by Johnny Depp's character.
Right, and Johnny Depp's daughter is going to be in the... And she's in this film. There's a convenience store scene, I've heard, and that's where Johnny Depp's daughter is.
Maybe I'll just drink an entire thermometer.
It's Kevin Smith's daughter and Johnny Depp's daughter.
So it's just like a...
And the movie, it's called, like, Yoga Hosers, because hilarious!
That is pretty funny.
Oh, I'm laughing inside.
Well, Moose Jaws is the third one, so...
Fucking kill me right now.
We'll send Jeff to those.
Thanks, guys.
Okay, so what were you saying?
I'd rather talk
about...
Is there
a guest at the door?
Come in, handsome Dan Stevens.
Oh, those piercing blue eyes are gorgeous. What are you doing with that knife? Oh, it's inside me.
All right, so a genre film that gets everything right, unlike Tusk, which, again, I haven't seen, is...
Or a genre.
No.
No, I don't know
what you're doing.
Or a degenerate, like in Gattaca.
Dave's trying to start a new bit.
Is the film The Guest.
Yes.
So this film, it came out limited release last week. It's coming out wider October 3rd, I believe, is the date. So it's directed by Adam Wingard. He's directed a few films. He recently directed You're Next.
And he does the framing devices for the VHS movies, right?
Right, yeah. He does stuff like that. And
he writes with his... writing partner.
Right, Simon Barrett. Yeah. He also wrote...
Simon Garfunkel.
Yeah, Simon and or Garfunkel. And Your Next, I didn't hate it, but it felt like it was missing something.
It was okay.
I liked...
Yeah, you're next. Dave. You're next if you don't let me get this fucking story out.
I loved the tone of Your Next.
Yeah, I loved... Like, Your Next was basically... It was like a send-up of horror tropes, and it was basically like people trapped in a house, but as a twist, one of the people in the house is really good at kicking everyone's ass, which is not like... You usually don't see that in the films. Everyone's just like helpless to the killers, whereas in Your Next... There's like a female character who's just really good at fighting them, and that was neat. But it still felt like, do you agree that like Your Next felt like it was just not quite?
There was always a level I wanted it to reach,
right?
And it never got there, and at the end I was just like,
you could have done more with this, basically. Yeah. And pretty much everything they didn't get right with Your Next, they get right with The Guest.
I read that the comedy doesn't hit in Your Next the way it does in The Guest.
It doesn't. The comedy in The Guest, right? Fucking great.
So a basic setup of The Guest. Basically, Dan Stevens plays a man named David. He shows up at the house of the Peterson family one day, and they've lost their eldest son, allegedly in the Afghanistan war. He's a soldier. And Dan Stevens' character, he says, oh, I was with your son when he died, and he wanted me to come just look out for your family. And so they welcome him into the family because he seems like such a nice guy. And he's really dreamy. He's
insanely charming.
He has unrealistically blue eyes. I've never seen eyes this blue. It's insane how blue his eyes are. I fell in love with Dan Stevens in this film. So he comes into with the Peterson family, and the eldest daughter starts realizing he's not all he's presenting himself out to be. I don't want to spoil it because part of this film is finding out exactly what his deal is.
Yeah, we're basically... catching up at the same rate that the family's catching up. Well, not the family, but the daughter's catching up.
She's the one who finds out.
Another nice touch. I like that. Was kind of nice the way they synced that up.
Right. Sorry, go ahead.
Are you going to keep telling? Because I had a...
No.
I love that when like things start to unravel in The Guest, they unravel insanely fast.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It just keeps getting crazier and crazier.
It's handled so well. Like, it never seems rushed. Like, I feel like another filmmaker, had they made this film, the way that it starts being revealed what David's deal is, you'd be like, oh, this is happening too fast. But it works so well in this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, the pacing was excellent. This is not a long movie.
No.
But it feels... And I don't mean this as a disparaging remark. It feels longer than it actually is because there's so much going on. It's very satisfying, is what I'm saying.
It doesn't fill in all the blanks for you. It lets you fill them in yourself, and it works. Like, you're able to get everyone's backstory just from like a few like quick things.
Yeah.
But the coolest part of it is that it feels like it takes place in the background of an 80s horror movie.
Right.
Yeah.
In my review, I was saying, like, it gets that retro feel perfectly without being, like, derivative. Like,
and it's not retro. It takes place during our, like, it's insane. It's all through camera movement and tone that they capture.
The music is very, like, synth. It's similar to, like, Drive, how Drive felt like it was, like, this retro sort of movie.
Yeah.
But it was set in modern times.
But this captured the horror element, whereas Drive was like more of like the
action.
Crazy action thriller.
And like, I like what you said about it not being derivative. Not once did I know where we were going here, which is so refreshing. And that is hard to say about a film that's essentially could be ticked off in the slasher genre.
Right, yeah.
But this is so much more than that.
Yeah, it's like everything in this film, you've seen it before, but it just feels fresh here, which is really a remarkable thing to pull off.
And even like the homages aren't in your face. They're just subtle.
Everything is like, subtle, and that just makes this film
like
all the
clothesline. It's like he never does the Michael Myers thing, but you get it when you see it, like the clothesline. You're like, oh, that reminds me of Halloween. Right.
And just everyone in the movie is just really good. Like, Dean Stevens is fantastic.
That is
like
a hell of a performance.
I've never seen him. I've never watched Downton Abbey, so I've never seen him in anything.
He's great in that. That's the problem with Downton Abbey is he was the best part, and then once he left, it was like, all right, well, I'm out.
Like, this is like a star-making performance, and like I want to see him in like a million things now because of it. And then everyone else around him is really good. I thought, I don't know how to pronounce her name. It's like... Maika,
we'll go with that.
Maika Monroe, as
she's excellent.
She's very good in this.
She looks like a young Chloe. What's her last name?
Savini.
Yeah,
I thought
Chloe Barnes, ace reporter from House of Cards. It's my second House of Cards reference.
We love the House of Cards.
Yeah.
What I liked about this movie was like they introduce characters and you think they're going to be one way and they're not. Like when they introduce her character, you think she's going to be like the generic like snobby teen girl, but she's not. And the same thing, like the younger brother, you think he's going to be like the annoying younger high school guy, but he's really likable. Like, I liked him a lot.
Yeah, he started when he's. It's hard to talk about this without spoiling it. But just that scene when they develop their relationship, right. You're like, oh wow, I didn't see it going this way.
Yeah,
and it's just, it's such a fun. It's so much fun. It's just. It's set during Halloween, which is like always a bonus in my mind, and I loved that aspect of it.
I was reading an interview on the Dissolve, and I was wondering this while watching it because like, it's kind of like with Videodrome, where we were saying like when they filmed this, did they feel ridiculous? Like I was thinking about how when Dan Stevens was reading this script, how did he get the comedy out of it? Like because it's all the comedy's in how the film was edited,
right.
Performed, like. It's not in the dialogue.
No, it's the delivery of the lines.
There are jokes. It's just like the facial expressions.
Yeah. And Adam Winger was saying like that they were going to go one of two ways, like that they would figure it out when they got on the set. Like either this is going to be a serious thriller dramatic movie or the comedy is going to hit. And that it organically went in the comedic direction, which... Thankfully, because
you can tell that it kind of fell into place on its own. Nothing's forced. There's no forced jokes.
Yeah,
this is one of the best movies I've seen this year.
Absolutely,
without a doubt.
This is in my top 10.
Yeah. I'd say it's in my top 3.
I don't want to get nuts.
Calm down, Dave. Here, take your.
I loved it. It was so much fun. Like I had more fun watching The Guest than I did watching Guardians of the Galaxy, which is like
I would say this is crazy. Like, this is up there. It's definitely in my top 10 for the year. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, when we compile our lists, you will be hearing from this film.
Like, I was thinking, like, I'll give that an 8. And then as I was writing the review, I was like, this was so good, I ended up giving it a 9.
And your review convinced me.
Right.
That, yeah, this is a 9. This is an excellent film.
Like, one thing I said in my review that I really think holds true is... it's not so much the content. It's, like, the attitude of this film, it reminds me of being a little kid... And I would go to the video store, and I would go to the horror section, and I would look at, like, the box art. Mm-hmm. And I would know nothing about the movie, and I'd just be like... And I would, in my mind, I would just make up how the movie would look based on the box art.
Oh, Carnosaur 3.
And that this film perfectly captures that just feeling of just, like, being young and going to, like, a shitty video store and looking at shitty box art.
Oh, Gremlins 2, the new bat. This looks good.
And
he's smoking a cigar.
What's this Castle Freak?
Oh, Cocoon 3.
Cocoon! Cocoon 3 is not a real movie.
Yeah, but it's funny you say that because then the marketing and the posters for this movie are terrible. They make it look like...
I imagine it's hard to market this because
you could have made like awesome retro vintage looking...
Definitely, yeah.
Which Mondo will probably do.
Yeah.
Adam Winger
this
and Mondo.
This thing is
going
to have such a life on video on demand and Blu-ray.
This is like a cult movie from the beginning.
It's strange because I read a review of it and they're like, not as cultish as You're Next. And I'm like, what are you talking about? This is like the definition of a cult film.
I'm very excited to see what he does next.
I don't know if it's going to be their next movie, but they also announced they're going to remake... I Saw the Devil, which is
a good movie.
A Korean movie.
And yeah.
That's a good movie, but I actually am really excited to see what they do with it, because that movie, even though it's good, it's so long. It just keeps going, and I want...
What you mentioned, that a lot of Korean horror does for some reason.
Yeah, I don't know what it is, but a lot of Korean horror movies, they have this tendency to just be very bloated, and I don't know what it is. Just I guess it plays better in that society like that, but just for me, as a boring white man, as I watch it, I'm just
with
like
no patience.
Yes, I watch it. I'm just like this. I would like this if it were just like a half hour shorter.
Yeah, they said they're working on like they have a full script written for a World War One movie. Sorry,
Walrus. Yes,
a World War One movie that they want to do, but like mature people, they aren't rushing into it. They said they wanted to get The Guest under their belt, and they like want to grow as filmmakers. So they said they're gonna make that film, I Saw the Devil, that was called, before they make their World War One movie, which I'm insanely excited for. That will be incredible. Or it should be. It could be an utter mess, but
it could.
You never know.
Is this a maze I'm in? How do I get out of this?
Oh no. Dave just flawlessly segued into his part of the pre-director series chat.
It was good. Yeah. So,
what did you see this week, Dave?
Dave, I believe you saw a film about Screamy Acres, where people are running through a corn maze. Is that what this film's about?
Yeah, this...
Yeah, all right, confirmed.
It is about that. And then my wingtips got all dirty.
Yeah. When Dave goes to the haunted hayride, he wears his wingtips. So,
I went into the Maze Runner expecting nothing. Utterly
that's,
nothing.
That's what you want to do.
Yeah. And
that's how I approach everything in my life, though. I just go in.
Including like, every dawn.
Yeah. Nothing's going to happen today.
My eyes open and I just nothing.
Yeah, pretty much.
And I'm sitting there in my chair and I had no excitement whatsoever. The lights go down and it has an awesome cold open, which I wasn't expecting from a movie like this because you rarely get that with these overproduced movies. What I was expecting was a franchise where, especially since it's...
You open in a field.
I'm just thinking, because it's a first-time director, that some guy like Ari Gold actually directed this movie, you know what I mean? By like, oh, it'd be a great idea if we had a shot of the maze with all the fucking subtitles coming out of it, you know what I mean? That's what I was expecting.
An opening crawl where they explain everything. The future.
You don't
the
get
year,
shit.
The year 2012.
Yeah. It's just him. I mean, you've probably seen the trailer.
The
right?
iPod has just come out.
He's going up on the elevator. That's all it is. He wakes up in the elevator.
Oh, I like that.
You get thrown right into the movie.
Excellent.
I don't really know a lot about it. I just know it's based on another young adult book.
Yeah, called The Maze Runner.
Right. It's in that, you know.
Oddly, coincidentally, has the same name.
It's in that, like, Hunger Games genre of... It seems like a lot of young adult now is just dystopian future stuff.
Yeah.
Like that's,
essentially, if you imagine a maze, but at the center of it was just empty... Like a field. It's more than a field because, and this is
it's
one
more
of
than a feeling. More than a fielding.
Yeah. Okay. Right. I'll go with that.
Is Ray Liotta as Shoeless Joe Jackson at the center of this field?
Eight men out, right?
Anyhow.
Go ahead. We're doing baseball movie references.
Anyway,
continue.
A League of Their Own. I'm just gonna name titles.
You nailed it.
Well, they were telling them that if they built the maze, they will come.
Right. Oh, okay.
Who told them that? Was it Bull Durham?
The ghost of Bull Durham.
Oh, okay.
Was it Bulls on Parade, that Rage Against the Machine
well,
song?
Well, hello, everybody. This is the Cut Print Film Podcast.
I see an opening. I'll go for it. I'm sorry.
One of the small issues I have with the Maze Runner is that it's called the Glade, the center of the maze. It never really – you never get a feeling for how big it is. It's like one minute it looks small, and then the next minute they're walking through woods that you never saw like – in the wide shot.
Do they get to the center of the maze in the film?
Well, they're in the center of the maze.
Oh, it's they start
they're trying
the
to get out of
I
the maze.
I see. All right.
Yeah.
So it's not, you know.
What about the center of the Tootsie Roll Pop?
It's Journey to the Center of the Tootsie Pop. Okay. That's
right. All right, continue. Dave.
Makes sense.
So there's rules. I mean, it's like a YA novel where the maze opens during the day and it closes at night. And at night, these... they're not minotaurs. They're like giant fucking crazy
bug monsters.
Spiders.
Yeah, I saw like a clip of them. They look horrifying.
Oh, yeah. They're incredible. I thought they were incredible. Another critic I read said they were trash, but they were comparable to the Mimics from Edge of Tomorrow.
Okay. I loved that design.
Not the Mimics from the film Mimic.
Sorry, Mia Sorvino.
Yeah.
They look like the Boogans a little bit.
Don't get me started.
So our main character, Thomas, starts breaking the rules and things go a little haywire. All of a sudden, a girl shows up.
Oh,
what?
No. Oh, no.
Oh, no, you didn't.
It's a good movie. It's riveting. That I was not expecting that.
I was surprised when you posted your review and you said it. I was like, wow, I did not expect that to be well received.
There were moments where, like, the action would calm down and I would like loosen the grip of my hands and realize that I'd been sweating in my palms and I'm like, oh my God. Like when I realized that, I'm like, I care about this bullshit. Like,
I remember seeing the poster for it.
The Postman?
Yeah. The Postman.
With Kevin Costner.
I hear he only rings twice. Anyway, I saw the poster for this and I had never heard of the movie, but, just based on the poster alone, I was like, that's intriguing.
Yeah.
I was like, it's called The Maze Runner. That has to be a YA novel.
Right.
So I looked it up, and sure enough, it was. But the idea I thought was interesting.
Unfortunately, it's a film completely undone by its ending.
Yeah, well, they got to make 17 more of them.
Ugh.
And you got to break the third one into two parts, Dave.
Oh, yeah, that's the rule now. Oh, the third one is always broken into two
parts. I was not thrilled with the ending to the point where as much as I like this, I don't think I would be at all interested in Maze Runner 2. Just because
that's how the Hunger Games left me.
It was like, this is like it was pointless essentially at the end. Not that doesn't ruin it, but
it just renders everything you just saw as being as a waste of time.
I hate cliffhanger ending. Even if I like the movie,
it wasn't a cliffhanger. It was slightly cliffhangery,
right?
In the same way that the end of Jurassic
Park is.
Just
the part where I make a joke about Stallone's cliffhanger.
I hope so. I'm waiting.
I won't do it.
Or Cliff
John,
Howard.
Is John Lithgow?
His name's Clint. Never mind.
Cliff Howard.
Cliff Clavin from Cheers.
Yeah.
All right, well, we've been doing this for 30 minutes, so we might as well stop doing it for a minute.
Yeah, we're going to take a break, and we're going to come back, and we're going to talk about David Cronenberg's Existenz.
And if you haven't seen that, you're better than us.
Yeah, you're better off than everyone at this table.
Here at Cutprint Film, we do our very best to keep you in tune with the movie industry. We're revolutionizing the way you read movie reviews by putting them on the internet. Go to cutprintfilm.com and we will guarantee you a pleasant experience. We're breaking new ground every day to bring you the finest material possible. We've partnered with such clients as morelikeradio.com, antifanboy.com, and Joystick Jerks, the podcast. So check out all of that and more on cutprintfilm.com. And remember, have a Cutprint Film day.
Good luck getting this out of your head.
I feel like we're cruising.
Yeah.
For a bruising.
Yes.
Stop punching me. Getting my Camaro.
Can you put, a little night can you put this on a mix for me?
Yeah, sure.
I will.
Ready? Here's the good part.
I'll play at the high school haunted house.
Don't feel bad.
I'm just ruining the movie for you. That's all.
All right. Hey, everybody. We're,
Fuck this podcast.
We're just going to play this song the rest of the show.
We're about to commit a mass genocide as we go into our discussion on David Cronenberg's Existenz.
We're going to commit some war crimes any minute now.
Boy. All right, well, this is
part of our director series.
Director series. That's it. I think that's enough. They've heard enough.
It's always funny.
It gets me every episode.
That's a little too long. I guess.
According to this MP3, there's 44 minutes left of this.
Of just Chris's action.
Just my echo of saying action.
All right, what are we talking about today, guys?
Well, we were on a nice roll there with David Cronenberg. We were having a good time. And then Jeff said, I hate having fun. So, out of all of David Cronenberg's film, he could have picked... Dead Ringers. He could have picked Naked Lunch.
He could have picked any other David.
He could have picked Crash. He could have picked History of Violence, Eastern Promises, any movie.
A Dangerous Method.
Any possible movie. Jeff said, I know.
How to Make a Cronut.
I know. We're going to pick Existenz.
Yeah. And I explained myself last episode by saying that...
You're an asshole.
I said that... I'm never going to watch this movie if we don't do it for this, so I might as well just pick it.
That's not a good reason.
To me, it was good enough.
Because, you know, you could say the same thing about murder. Like, I'm never going to murder someone unless I murder this guy.
At the time, it sounded like a good reasoning, but then I watched it, and good God, this movie, I'm going to show my hand right now. This sucks. This movie's horrible.
All right. I'm not going to defend the movie, but I will say I didn't hate it as much as Jeff did.
I can't remember a movie this bad in recent memory I've watched.
I think that's pushing it. But then again, I've seen a lot more bad movies.
You watch them as like an Olympic sport.
Yeah, I do watch a lot of bad movies on purpose.
I have very little tolerance for bad films.
I went into this, you know, we just came off two really good Cronenberg movies.
Right.
And I was a Cronenberg fan, so I was all excited for what he could do with this concept, and this is just garbage.
So why don't you break it down for us, Jeff? What's Existenz with a capital X, capital Z about?
Yeah. Why don't you just break our microphones? And
why don't you break our hearts and pick another shitty movie?
All right, well, put on your seatbelts. This is a
buckle up.
This goddamn plot synopsis is insanity. All right, here we go. In the near future, organic virtual reality game consoles known as game pods have replaced electronic ones.
Butt cheeks. Yeah. They look like butt cheeks.
We'll get to it.
Like tumorous butt cheeks.
The pods attached to bioports.
Assholes.
Which are essentially assholes on your back, attached at the player's spines through umbilical cords, also called umbi cords.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. I didn't really.
Yeah.
Let's just stop the show right now.
Two game companies, Antenna Research and Cortical Systematics, compete against one another.
And Ubisoft.
Yeah. No, Ubisoft's not in this. Antenna Research's Allegra Geller, played by Jennifer Jason Leigh, who is the greatest game designer in the world, is testing her latest virtual reality game, Existenz, with a focus group at a seminar.
And if you're allergic to bad movies, you may have to take Allegra before watching. Is that a stretch?
No, I like that. At the seminar, she's shot by a would-be assassin who shoots her with an organic pistol, which they pull a tooth out of her shoulder.
A tooth gun.
Yeah, it's a tooth gun.
I'm going to say
that thing is fucking creepy.
The reason I can't hate the movie is because I love that gun.
I do too.
I love that gun and I love the tooth bullet.
I loved it. as her assassin is gunned down, her security guard, Ted Peichel, played by Jude Law, rushes to Geller's side and takes her outside.
The original J Law.
Mm-hmm. Allegra discovers that her pod has been damaged due to being prematurely unplugged during her assassination attempt. And to test it and fix it, she must plug into the game with a friendly player who would be Mr. Peichel.
Don't worry if you're lost, because it doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't get any better either. No. You're going to get really lost. Peichel and Allegra go to for some reason, they go to a gas station who is manned by a man named Gas, played by Willem Dafoe.
He's an orb of gas of just...
No, he isn't, but it doesn't really matter. Gas gives Peichel a bioport with a air compressor gun.
Yeah, he gives him a copy of the film Biodome as well.
starring Pauly Shore.
Yes, and one of the Baldwins. And,
yes, Gary Baldwin, I believe.
Gary Baldwin!
Gas gives him a faulty bioport. And then attempts to kill Allegra because she is worth more dead than alive.
Yeah. But she changed your life.
Yeah, who gives
a shit? Now I'm going to change hers.
So, Peichel kills Gas, and then the pair make their way to a ski lodge.
Why not?
Where Allegra's mentor, Kiri Vinokur.
Why not?
Played by Ian Holm.
Why not?
Attempt to... repair her damaged game pod and give Peichel what he thinks is a real bioport. Good God, are you still with me?
No.
I'm going to say, even though I still don't hate the movie as much as Jeff, hearing this synopsis, I want to fucking flush this movie down the toilet.
Uh-huh. So with that new bioport, Allegra and Peichel are able to play Existenz and...
It doesn't help that Jeff is reading this like he's reading notes at a wake.
I hate this. I'm mourning my grandfather. Yeah,
he was in the army.
They plug into Existenz and...
It's all right. You're almost done.
God. They realize that...
They go get Chinese food.
Yeah, they get Chinese food, and
they end up in the game, which looks exactly like the real world, except there are more people, and everyone is wearing fleeces.
Right, and they're told that they have to order the special at this Chinese restaurant.
And the Chinese waiter, they call him Chinese waiter, which I actually thought was hilarious.
I didn't. That humor was lost on me.
All right.
they order the special, which Peichel becomes. He has to eat this disgusting meal, and he starts putting together...
Well, it's his gamer-generated behavior.
I guess.
He puts together the gun again from the beginning of the film.
The gun makes an appearance again out of the bones from his meal.
It won't be the last time you see that gun.
I wish it was. He shoots the waiter, and then they end up back at the factory where they were told to go to this restaurant something. By Yevgeny.
And
Nourish.
A guy shows up with the lamest flamethrower ever.
Oh, God. Yeah, something so
he,
about their
he
pod.
He burns the game pod.
Yeah, their pod and the game is diseased, so he burns it, and bees come out of it or something.
Yeah, there's the game pod is similar to Candyman in that if you cut a hole in it, bees fly out of it.
It becomes a black man that bees come out of his mouth.
Yeah, he's got a hook for a hand.
Wait, she's like, this is disease. Let me plug it into myself.
Yeah, so.
And then they're outside.
They're outside, and then everyone gets shot. And then they wake up, and they're back in
another game.
It's a much more modern-looking world.
Called Transcendence, right. With a capital C, capital Z, because and everything is
hilarious.
Awful.
And Sarah Polley is there wearing the worst wig in film history.
This just stinks. The real game designer is this guy, Yevgeny Nourish, who was in Existenz as a cast member.
What do you want from me, says Jeff.
God, I'm so annoyed at reading this.
Then they shoot him.
Yeah, they and then Paykel and
then the,
Allegra some, kill him.
And then some guy, because this film can't be subtle at all, says, hey, guys, are we still in the game? And then the movie ends.
They stare at the screen, and we fade the credits, and Cronenberg pats himself on the back as if he did something
and
here.
And then Jeff goes into the garage with the car on.
Yeah, and we fade out of existence.
I plug a pistol into my bioport, which is my ear hole.
All right, so... Existence. All right, is there anything you guys like about this film?
Yes.
Be honest.
Yes, there is.
Okay.
I like the... By the genetic gun. I like that bone gun.
Like, I love how gross the film is. Like,
yes.
There's a lot of practical effects using just, like, gross, gooey stuff. And that's part of the reason I can't completely write off the movie. Even though this is one of Cronenberg's worst movies.
His worst movie.
I don't know if it's his. I think Cosmopolis is
worse. I haven't seen Cosmopolis. That just sounds dreadfully boring.
That's unwatchable. This movie I could get through at least a few times. Cosmopolis I could barely finish once. But there's a lot of gooey Cronenbergian stuff in this movie that I like a lot.
There's a lot of surgery they have to do on these game pods, which, right. Like Dave said, look like butt cheeks with moles on them.
Right.
They're disgusting looking. But when they do surgery on them, it looks like.
Looks like the scene bio from Alien, tissue.
Yeah, it's gross.
Apart the face
and there. I appreciate it. I appreciate the grossness of, because these are meant to be flesh meets technology, and Cronenberg has touched on this time and time again,
right.
And I like that about it.
Right.
Aside from that, there's not much I like about this.
Yeah. So one of the things I was saying to Dave earlier was this film, it's very similar to Videodrome. It has that similar sort of ideal. Even the
death
way...
Death to realism.
Yeah.
What?
Oh, God. There's a mock...
Death to...
In Videodrome, there's a big thing...
Cross that out.
There's a big realism. Thing where characters keep saying, like, death to Videodrome. And in this film, they have that, where they say, death to the demoness Allegra Geller. And they say stuff like that.
Yeah.
So...
It's the same script.
Whereas Videodrome felt very prophetic about video and technology, this film feels completely tone-deaf about video games.
If there was anything he could have gotten wrong about video games, he got wrong about video games.
I would say this is the official film of Gamergate, whereas it's basically about confused people trying to kill a woman. That's basically what it boils down to.
And might I say that at the game demo at the beginning of the film, this might be the oldest group of gamers I've ever seen. There's like a 75-year-old man.
It doesn't even make sense. They're in like a church. Like it's a fucking AA meeting.
It's a Unitarian church.
Well, the church stuff is like heavy-handed, like technology meets religion, because they ask for 12 volunteers, like 12 disciples, stuff like that.
I don't buy that.
I'm not saying I like it. I'm just saying that's what they're going for.
I do not extend this olive branch to you, David Cronenberg.
This is like the anti-Videodrome.
Yeah.
That's how it felt.
This feels like someone watched a Cronenberg movie and then said, I want to make a Cronenberg movie, but it wasn't actually made by Cronenberg.
Yeah, it's shocking how poorly
directed.
Executed. Everything across the board. The performances are awful.
The practical effects are good.
The direction is awful. Some of the practical effects are good. A lot of them are terrible. When that Chinese waiter gets shot,
in the face,
that looks like a garbage pail kid.
I like that. I kind of like the way he gets shot.
Really, you like that?
I like because it.
I remember this is 1999.
Jeff looked like he wanted to stab me in the neck.
It looked like a garbage pail kid card. It was horrible.
I just liked how weird it was. Like,
if David Cronenberg had killed himself after watching this, I would not have been surprised. Like, what did I just?
Jesus, that's a bit much.
This is bad.
Hey,
it is.
I have a direct quote from David Cronenberg on the design of these game pods, which I actually liked. Even though you said they were butt cheeks.
I like the game. I think they're neat.
I like that they were like these fleshy
They look
blobs.
Like Xbox controllers if they were made of skin, basically.
But here's the quote, and this explains everything about this movie and what's wrong with it. They're positively beautiful. That's a direct quote.
I feel
quote.
So disappointed in David Cronenberg.
That's
after
all
how
I felt
when
this movie. Well, actually, I felt that throughout the entire film. And I sighed so much throughout this film that I almost passed out.
It's Cronenberg overload. That's what the film feels like. And Chris was saying earlier that none of it felt like a real movie. It felt like someone filming
direct
behind
to
the
sci-fi
scenes.
Channel. This
It's like if you've ever seen like behind the scenes footage of people filming a movie. And it's like someone with a video camera filming someone with a real camera filming a movie, and you're watching that footage before it's like color corrected and the sound has been corrected and it's been tightened up. That's how this entire movie
like people just standing in a room.
Yeah,
like
it feels like a rehearsal for the real movie.
Yeah,
and that alone shocks because Cronenberg, despite this movie, is still a really good director, and it's not on display here. This film feels cheap. It feels shoddy. Jude Law is fucking atrocious.
He's god awful.
They're all bad.
The overall feeling I had watching this movie, and I wrote this in my notes. This feels like watching someone else play an RPG, and I can't think of any experience worse than watching a friend play an RPG game.
Right.
That makes sense because you're watching the NPC. The actors are like those non-playable characters,
yeah.
And they act like that, but that doesn't work for a movie.
No.
It's like,
no.
Even if you're trying to make a commentary, it's not there.
And this movie has a terrible sense of place and geography. I have no idea where we are at any given time. And I am willing to extend this to Cronenberg. Maybe he was making a statement on the fact that we don't know what the real reality is.
Right.
I will extend that to him.
I just
on the geography of the game and the sense of space.
He makes some like offhanded comparisons to like the film industry.
Yeah, he does.
Where
and
he's
that,
like,
even that works for me.
When he's like, oh, it costs this much, excluding pre-marketing, like stuff like that. And your script is bad.
There's even at the end of the film, they talk about how absurd the game pods in Existenz look.
Right.
And I like that. Like, you're acknowledging that. I get it. That's good stuff. But
I didn't even pick up on that because I had mentally tapped out. But that does make sense that, like, they have, like, real-looking game pods when they come, like, a layer out. It's kind of like
they're made of plastic. Like
and they're wearing headgear, and it's not an umbilical cord plugged into an asshole in your back.
One of the things that I really... ticked me off is this the style of this movie, and it's very 90s looking.
This couldn't be, and this is 1999.
Like Jennifer Jason Leigh. I think she's a great actress in general. She's not very good in this, and just they give her this weird like crimped hairstyle where
it's like that,
and
80s.
Just like and like Jude Law for the whole movie, he's wearing this like hideous drab like fleece. It's like, could you fucking dress your characters just a little bit better? They look terrible. They look like they're in rehearsal.
You know that like 80s video game vibe that like people thought the future was going to be like?
Right.
Kind of like cyberpunk, I guess that's what you would call
it.
That's what this is, but it's too late. It's 1999. This movie came out 23 days after
The
Matrix.
Yeah.
Can you believe that? They must have been shitting themselves after seeing The Matrix.
Yeah, The Matrix came out and was this cultural phenomenon, and then here comes Existenz a month later, and nobody rushed out to see this thing.
And they're like, essentially the same story.
They are.
Humans are batteries for
machines. The fucking bioports. It's all there. It's just...
It almost feels like this is like a bunch of teens saw The Matrix and was like, let's make our own movie. And then they made this.
And the fact that it's Cronenberg is what makes it so disappointing.
That's why
I'm coming down so hard on this
all
thing.
All right. Now that you put it like that, I see your point. Because like, if this were another lesser filmmaker, I'd be like, well, that sucked, but whatever.
Yeah.
But I agree that the fact that this is a Cronenberg film, it's like...
David Cronenberg is supposed to be a visionary and somebody with such a finger on the pulse
right.
of
you know, what's cutting edge.
I think the problem is it's just like he doesn't really know anything about video games.
Clearly.
And like, I'm someone who barely knows anything about video games, but just watching this, I can tell David Cronenberg has never played a video game in his life. Just like based on just the way this film plays out.
But even, let's forget about the gaming aspect of it. Just the pacing of the film is horrendous. And like I said, the sense of geography, they're in one place and then immediately they're in another place. And then we meet this guy, Gast, played by Willem Dafoe, and there's a line when he turns on them after they've met for 15 minutes where Allegra says, "Oh no, not you, Gast." What are you talking about? And then she just met.
And then, like,
what do you mean, not you, Gast?
Her next line after that is like, "What are you going to do?" Like, she said it like she knew what he was going to do, and then 2 seconds later is questioning his motivation. It was like, it didn't make sense.
I will say I thought Willem Dafoe actually was pretty good in it. I thought his performance was not bad.
Willem Dafoe's almost never not good.
Yeah. But he seemed to get the right sort of tone where he was like, oh, this is a goofy movie, and he was playing to that.
And I guess you could say that, you know, in the end we find out that that whole thing was part of another game. I guess you could excuse the odd way that she reacts to him pulling a shotgun on her. But still, come on.
Yeah, but that feels like a cop-out.
Feel like a cop-out. You can't make the whole movie bad performances and then say that it was supposed to be that way.
It's like saying this is a movie about a shitty movie, essentially.
Yeah.
It's just everything in the movie feels like it's a beat off. Like, it feels like...
Two beats off.
Like, I don't know if it's like
me singing.
I don't know if it's like a problem with the editing or what. It really feels like rehearsal to me. Like, if you ever see footage of people, they show up to rehearsal for a film, they're wearing their street
normal clothes.
Yeah, they're wearing their street clothes. They have their scripts in their hand. They're just standing in a circle or they're sitting like it's like a table read.
Yeah.
Like, they show up and they're sitting at a table, they're fucking drinking coffee and they're just reading their lines. That's what this entire film feels like.
This whole thing. Like, we talked about how good the performances of Jeff Goldblum, Gina Davis, James Woods were in these last two films.
Allen.
What's that?
Nancy Allen.
Encino Man.
Oh,
yeah. Encino Man is a great actor.
But even right down to the effects team, we are a step removed from the greatness that we had in the Chris Wallace team. Now we have Jim Isaac heading things, who was part of Chris Wallace's team, but he branched off. And he went on to do the effects in Look Who's Talking To.
Wow. Oh, did he do the talking toilet?
Talking babies.
Excuse me, he didn't go on to do that. He did the effects for Look Who's Talking To. He did go on to direct Jason X.
Which is
a terrific entry in the Friday the 13th series.
I love Jason X. David Cronenberg is in Jason X, by the way.
I didn't mean to suggest Cronenberg should have killed himself, but
Jason X is the one in space, right?
I sure is.
I love that movie.
I was just very disappointed in Cronenberg after watching this, but he does redeem himself after this. He makes History of Violence.
I don't think he's lost it by any means.
He did lose it for a second, and he probably had a lot of trouble getting another movie off the ground.
It looked like he had a lot of trouble getting this off the ground.
The film he made after this was Spider with Ralph Fiennes, and that movie is a very good movie. It's subtle, and it actually doesn't have any of his, like...
Oh, man, we could have picked that. That was
I wish Jeff had picked that. It doesn't have any of his, like, weird tics in it. It's almost like he made this movie, and he was like, oh, that didn't work out.
Yeah.
Let me do something different.
There's not a single finger going into a body in Spider. Yeah,
there's no, like, body horror in Spider, but Spider is actually a very good movie. And then after Spider, he made History of Violence, which I would argue is one of his best modern movies.
Definitely. His last three have been great. Well, I mean, besides Cosmopolis.
Yeah, Cosmopolis.
Cosmopolitan,
the drink.
And they're, like, fingering each other's butthole. They're, like, lubing up. It's obviously, like, an asshole.
Jude Law tongues.
See, that didn't bother me. Like, because
Jennifer Jason Leigh's body.
I like some ass play too.
I would love to tongue Jennifer Jason Leigh's body for.
But at that point, I looked at my wife and I didn't say anything. But I was thinking,
why don't you let me tongue your body part?
No, I wanted to turn this off and sell the house and just move out into the plains. But Jude Law has hair in this film. I don't understand what's happening there.
He's really bad.
He's atrocious.
He's the worst person in the film. I don't know why, because
playing it as though he's a pouty little boy. I don't get this performance at all. And he's doing this awful American accent.
Oh, it's bad.
He keeps slipping out of it, too.
It's so bad.
But he's playing it like I don't know, like a naive kind of
like this is the first time he's ever left the house.
Like a prude.
Yeah.
Because like she keeps trying to bang him and he's like, oh, I feel like very vulnerable.
Like I feel like with a better performance, this could have been a good character because early in the film he talks about like he's like afraid of having his body penetrated and like you could have done something with that.
Yeah.
But the movie doesn't.
Not with that script, you're not doing anything with it.
Yeah, it's
the script is horrible.
And the script's full of this like pseudo jargon, like you jacked my pod with your neurostopping. And just, like that'll go on for minutes.
And this is stuff that they did in The Fly and Videodrome, but I didn't really like it in The Fly, but it worked better in Videodrome. It doesn't work at all in this film.
You're just like, what am I listening to?
This is garbage.
Garbage. That's the tagline for this was play it, live it, kill for it.
Why don't you go but fuck yourself? That's the tagline.
Go fuck yourself. This is garbage.
I feel like, whereas like Videodrome is a movie that I never want to see remade, if they remade this, I'd be happy about it. They could do something good with this. Especially in now.
You would just be better off making a different movie.
Maybe, but like, I honestly think like if you made something like this now and tied it into like the Gamergate shit, that actually would be interesting. Like, people just furious at this video game designer who's like a woman, and then you have that stuff in it.
I felt like that was a cop-out, that initially the woman is the designer of the video game, but then
It's just some guy at the end.
Dude.
Gamergate is clearly not as progressive as we thought it would
be. Well, it was 1999.
True.
But just that shit where it's just like, it's so late. It's lazy writing. Allegra Geller, the best designer in the world.
Oh, really?
Why? Why is she why? There, you can't just say that about your character. That's that's cheap. It's like having someone show up and being like, this character is the best doctor in the, like, there's a scene in fucking Armageddon, the Michael Bay movie, where there's a doctor. He's played by Ben. His name is like Ben Chapman. Is that doctor? Or it's one of those actors. It's one of those generic British actors. Yeah. And Billy Bob Thornton's character is like, you should listen to this guy. He's the smartest man in the world. Like that's so cheap. It's such it robs your movie of effect. Give your character some fucking credit.
I like my script to be pure hyperbole. Fantastic.
And just like people are just like. Like when Willem Dafoe meets her, he's like kissing her feet. And just like, stop it. Just stop it. Why are you doing this, Cronenberg? We love you.
The thing that shocks me so much
is the electrical socket.
No.
Oh.
This film is sitting at 71% on Rotten Tomatoes.
What the fuck?
When I saw that, I almost had an existential crisis.
Good night.
Good night, everyone.
Around that like .com bubble where all the companies like
the fear.com bubble.
Yeah, pets.com was really
They did the capital letters in because that kind of happened with like Tumblr. He anticipated weirdness in words, but just not in the right way.
Well,
so I'll give him that.
There's a little bit of trivia on the capital X and the capital Z. Did you read that?
No. Does the Z's put you to sleep at the end?
No.
Yeah, you take Z-Quil, I believe, and then you go to sleep.
Two producers of the film are Hungarians, so it is not by chance that the X and the Z of the word existens are capitalized, since the letters between them make up the Hungarian word Isten, which means God. In which case, you know, let's all kill ourselves.
That's a good reaction.
I read that Cronenberg got the idea for this after talking to the guy who wrote that.
Salman Rushdie.
Yeah.
And that's a neat idea. Yeah, he wrote the Satanic Verses, and basically there was a
fatwa.
Yeah, put out on his life. And that's,
and they used that word, fatwa, when there's a hit put out on Allegra Geller.
Isn't that like specifically like an Islamic thing?
Yeah, it is.
Okay, so David Cronenberg's.
People do that with like I think people use like jihad. They use that out of Islamic.
I believe that's the new model of Jeep.
Yeah, like the Jeep jihad. And like again, like I think something like that could be done interestingly. And again, it ties into sort of the Gamergate shit. Like you could do something interesting with this, but it's just
this
not,
isn't it.
It's not this movie. This is a tone deaf movie. Is the best way I would put it.
I hated it. Roger Ebert loved it. I hate this movie. I hate it.
Well, I don't know if I think the public agrees with us because it made $2.8 million.
Well, that's the thing. Everything that The Matrix did right, this thing did wrong.
Right.
And even though I like the ideology in some of the stuff in this film, the execution is just piss poor.
It's not done well.
Across the board, top to bottom, performance, direction, effects,
It's a stellar everything. Cast, too. Ian Holm, Chris Esselton.
Like. Yeah, these people are normally good. Like, I normally like Jude Law. I don't think he's a bad actor.
Not at all.
But, and I think Jennifer Jason Leigh, I said earlier, is a fantastic actress. But
what
even,
are these performances?
They're just, it's just, I don't get it. Like, a part of me wants to think of it as, like, oh, it's on purpose. But again, that, like we were saying, that's a cop-out. Yeah. It's like a part of me wants to think, oh, they're acting stilted and weird on purpose because they're all in a game.
I do not allow that at all.
Because and it doesn't hold true because even after the film ends and they're not in the game anymore, they're still acting like that. And
yeah.
It doesn't...
Yeah. But are they still in the game?
Oh, fucking fuck your mother, please. Yeah. Jesus.
I know I half-assed the plot synopsis, but don't... Even yeah. Don't even spend a minute
like that
fretting about that.
That was a controller on
yeah,
their left.
Yeah, they're playing with half asses in the game. So
no, but what the fuck was I just gonna say?
Probably nothing important.
Yeah, I don't think it was. It was probably worthless jargon about this horrible film.
Don't even bother watching this film. Watch any of David Cronenberg's other much better movies.
Yeah, I would say 90% of Cronenberg's work is stellar, and just this is not. This is not lumped
this
in.
This was
that.
Not the way to go out on this series, and I apologize.
Yeah, Jeff owes us all an apology.
I apologize to both my co-hosts and all the listeners. I'm sorry.
Jeff owes us all an arrangement from Edible Arrangements.
Here, I don't think much of you. Here's a fruit basket. I'm sorry your mother died.
Well, you know that scene in Videodrome where, I brought this up earlier, I think, where James Woods is whipping the TV, and yeah. It's like, we're like, oh, they must have felt ridiculous doing that. Like, oh, I wonder if this is going to play well. And I can imagine everyone on this film feeling that way and then watching it and being like, oh, fuck.
Uh-huh.
I can't,
it was as bad as it felt.
I would love to know Cronenberg's thoughts of this movie now. Like, I wish I could, like, interview him and ask him, like, come on, spill the beans on what you think about Existence.
There is not a lot on this film on the internet. There's not much at all. There's no extra features. There's no behind the scenes.
I mean, he's an intelligent guy. He's got to realize this didn't turn out the way he wanted it to.
Well, you
out.
Can talk to him if you go down to David Cronenberg's ice cream shop. All right, I think
I'll have the chocolate vanilla twist, Mr. Cronenberg.
All the cones are pulsing and shooting blood everywhere.
I think the best way. Well,
I'll have the new flesh, one scoop.
The best way to sum this up, Chris already said, this is a tone-deaf film on gaming.
Right.
It's just completely
tone-deaf.
So
if you want to watch a movie about gaming, don't watch this movie. Maybe watch Gamer with Gerard Butler.
That's
probably a better movie than this.
If you die in the game, you die in real life.
Hmm. Or The Wiz. Maybe watch
that. Yeah, maybe watch the... Or is it the one with Fred Savage and the power glove?
Yeah, watch Wiz Khalifa. Well, I don't even know where we are anymore.
Okay.
How did I get here?
So next up, we mentioned this gentleman earlier, Roman Polanski.
Yeah, right. He's the next director.
He is the rapist we're going to be talking about later.
Yes, exactly. We're going to try and look past his earthly sins.
Yeah, his malfeasance.
Yes.
Or at least we'll get to it chronologically as it appears in our list.
He's had an interesting life. I mean, he survived a concentration camp. His wife was murdered by the Manson family. He raped a girl.
Yeah.
He fled the country.
Yeah,
it's a very interesting life.
Do not be under any impression that we don't think that this guy is a piece of garbage.
Oh, no, he raped a girl. That's a bad thing.
But he is a wonderful filmmaker.
Absolutely.
And that's why we're going to be touching on some of his films.
So he's next in our director series.
So watch Knife in the Water if you want to keep up with
us. That's the first entry.
And it was Polanski's first feature film. So we're starting out with the first one.
All right.
Let's do some recommendations, Buzz.
Like hell yeah. Idea.
Who's picking movies? Cut, print, film, cut. Who's picking movies? Cut, print, film, cut. Who's picking movies? Cut, print, film, cut.
What the fuck is happening?
I forgot we were doing that one. It took me completely by surprise.
Okay, I'm going to pull the curtain back here. I love listening to these things for the first time on the show, and I just had a great time listening to that.
Wow. Who's picking movies?
The Cut Print Film Podcast, that's who.
Yeah.
Who?
I'll go first.
Okay.
My pick is the 2001 film Frailty, directed by Bill Paxton.
Watch yourself there.
Yeah, so this film, it has Matthew McConaughey in it before the McConaissance, before he had his big comeback and everyone was like, oh, this guy is actually a really good actor.
This was the very first time I thought, wow, McConaughey is
he's
quite
excellent.
An actor.
So, Bill Paxton.
That was fool's gold.
No.
No.
So Bill Paxton, the actor, directed this film. It's a horror movie. Very few people saw this. I remember this movie came out on my birthday, April 13th.
It was, happy birthday. Happy
thanks,
birthday.
Everyone. And for my birthday, I went to see this, and the theater was empty. So so very few people saw this film, but I think it's an underrated, excellent movie. So the film stars Matthew McConaughey. He plays a guy. Powers Booth plays a sheriff. Powers Booth, the great character actor, awesome. With a great name.
Awesome.
He arrests Matthew McConaughey under suspicion of murder, and Matthew McConaughey spins him a tale of his father, played by Bill Paxton, how back in the day, Bill Paxton said he basically received a message from God, and his message was he had to kill people who were also demons. So Bill Paxton and his two young sons, one of his young sons is McConaughey's character when he was a kid. They kidnap people and they brutally murder them with axes.
Yeah,
that's good.
And I don't want to spoil it because there's a lot of twists in the movie, and it's a dark, moody movie.
It's really well made
for Bill Paxton's first directorial film. I think this is actually the only film he's directed so far, probably because no one saw this movie and he gave
up. It's so good though.
But it's excellent. It's an excellent movie, and it's just. I won't say it's subtle. It's a little over the top at times.
Well, it's Bill Paxton.
Yeah. But, yeah, it's like his character from Aliens in film form.
It's a fucking dry heat, man.
Like, there's a part in the film earlier which is so bad.
Game over, man.
That's at the end of Existence.
Yeah.
Game over.
There's a part where Bill Paxton, he's sitting down with his kids, and his kids are eating dinner. And his one son goes, "I sure love peas," in this accent and voice. And Bill Paxton goes, "Careful there, son. You're going to turn into a pea." And that's a terrible scene. Oh. But don't judge the film based on that scene, because it's a really good movie. It's creepy. There's a twist at the end, which is really well handled, which you're not going to see coming. And it's neat.
It's a titty twister.
Yeah, yeah. It's a titty twister. It's a buttery nipple, I believe. So 2001.
A purple nurple.
2001's Frailty.
What was that?
Is that the goo from Existence?
Yes, it's the game pod being turned on from Existence.
Moving itself.
And that's about Existence for you. Dave?
I'm gonna go off book a little bit here.
Oh, you're recommending a book,
then. Do something I don't normally do.
Oh, I'm really excited to hear what this is.
And I'm gonna recommend a documentary.
Get the fuck out. No one saw this coming.
And I wouldn't do this if I didn't just watch the most affecting documentary.
Do you mean a dogumentary? Did you watch the Shaggy DA?
All right.
Did you watch Air Bud Golden Receivers?
Guys, this is no laughing matter.
All right.
I watched this fucking movie and it put me in like fits of anxiety and terror.
It's called Epilepsy.
It's on HBO Go right now. It's called Terror at the Mall.
Oh.
My younger brother recommended it to me. And, oh, God, it is. Okay, so last year, do you remember when that mall was invaded by terrorists in Kenya?
Yes.
Oh, I thought you meant around Christmas time. No, sorry.
By Al-Shabaab, a segment of Al-Qaeda.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is a film entirely put together from security cameras inside the mall.
Oh, so it's a feel-good movie.
Good God.
And witness interviews, of like the survivors' interviews. It is fucking intense. But it's kind of important that you watch it. I was saying to Chris before the podcast, like, this is my first recommendation that I'm insisting you guys watch. Like, it was a good fucking movie. Like, and it scared the shit out of me.
Is there like a narrative to it, or is it just...
It follows the day. Like,
okay.
All right. Chronologically as the events unfold, and it jumps into it pretty quickly.
So it's sort of like the film Chopping Mall.
Yeah.
It's like Mall Madness.
Yeah.
That was actually the working title, but...
That seems a little insensitive.
Yeah, that's why they changed it to Terror at the Mall, which
it's kinda
is
like,
essentially the same
It's kind of like Mall Rats, right? Where
there's film. Less Kevin Smith.
How many Snoochies and or Boochies are there?
I tweeted, Kenya, no, after I saw this.
Wow.
How
like, brutal is the footage? Like, is it upsettingly brutal, or is
yeah,
it...
Yeah, okay. I almost cried while watching it.
All right, well, you
all have no problem, though.
Yeah, Jeff will be like,
"Yeah, well, Jeff's a robot."
He'll be popping popcorn in his mouth. I was like, "I don't get it." The crazy thing is that this was like like a community center almost, where all these different religions and races of people, you know, met with each other and got along, mm-hmm. and
you know, like, it's not like it's not, normal people do.
Yeah. It's not like the Cherry Hill Mall, right? There's no Victoria's Secret or
it's like a strip. Kind of.
There's no Cinnabon.
It's not that Western. It's pretty Western. Okay. And there's a lot of like white European people, French people in the mall.
French kissing?
I hope so.
Not that white people are more valuable, but this is like a Kenyan mall. You wouldn't expect that. You know what I mean? But it's also, as depressing as it is, it's also kind of uplifting to see people like going out of their way to help other people. Like, yeah. Because I would just be like, fuck this, and run away. But there's people who, like...
You would flee with your Banana Republic bag in hand.
You know, they're about to run out and down the corridor see a kid. And it's like, what do? Like, yeah. People are shooting bullets. You have to go back for the kid. Like, stuff like that where it's brutal, but...
Jesus, 71 people died in this attack. Wow. That's insane.
And four guys with AK-47s. That's all
crazy.
And it mostly resulted from the security forces not going into the mall. Mm. Like, because they could have easily converged on these guys and killed them, but...
That's terrible. That is terrible.
Yeah.
Right, well, I'm going to queue it up.
Yeah, we'll definitely watch it. It's on HBO Go. I love Misery, so... Yes.
And it is... Well, this is the movie for you.
I love Trouble. Seems a little inappropriate now.
Sorry, I should have went last. That would have been a great segue to Piano Jam.
Well, this is our 30th episode, and I figured, well, since this is our podcast, I can do whatever the fuck I want.
Hell so, yeah.
I'm going to recommend three movies because they are a trilogy.
Star Wars.
Star Wars, Indiana Jones. Like, they're not all in the same
trilogy. I'm very confused. This is... A trilogy, it's called the Proletariat Trilogy by Finnish director Aki Kaurismäki. It starts with 1986's Shadows in Paradise.
I wish my name rhymed.
David Kavin. It starts with 1986's Shadows in Paradise, and then 1988's Ariel, and then ends with 1990's The Match Factory Girl. And in these, I'm going to crib the synopsis from Criterion's site. In these three social realist farces, Kaurismäki surveys the working class outcasts of his native Finland with detached yet disarming amusement. Featuring commanding off-key visual compositions and delightfully dour performances, the films in this triptych exemplify the talents of a unique and highly influential film artist. What I like about these films is, first of all, they're very, very compact. Each one is... anywhere between 74 minutes to 68 minutes.
Okay.
They're short films. And
I love when that happens.
When do they take place?
They take place, I believe, during Ayatollah, what's his last name? Khomeini. During that time.
But they're Finnish?
Yeah, they're Finnish.
So what is that? What do the two have to do with each other?
Nothing. One family's watching this news.
Oh, okay, okay.
That's what I'm.
Okay, so it's not
because
like the match factor girl. That kind of reminds me of, like Victorian, like the match.
No,
girls.
No. These take place in somewhat modern times.
Okay.
All the delivery of these characters is deadpan, and there's a lot of humor in that.
So it's comical.
There's some comedy. There's one scene in Ariel where a guy inherits his father's car, and he goes to pick it up, starts the car, and the second he backs out of the garage just collapses. And it looks like it's made out of toothpicks. It's hilarious. But as these films go, they... starting from Shadows in Paradise, there's a lot more comedy in that, and as they go along, they get darker in tone. And they're just really well-made films. The dialogue is quick, and they do a lot with silence between characters. There's a lot of uncomfortable moments between characters, and it's called the Proletariat Trilogy because these are working-class people that I would describe their living conditions as squalor. Okay. These are filthy, filthy living conditions. But these people just have the... outlook of grin and bear it. They're getting on with their daily life.
Is it like a commentary on Finnish like social?
Yeah, it's definitely the social structure of Finland, and this is what it's like. People are just trying to do better with these very little means.
Yeah, because they were like, I guess because they're so close to Russia, they kind of had some of that communism.
Oh yeah,
you know,
yeah, there's
flooded.
A lot of communal, you yeah. know, living with what you're given by
yeah,
the state.
Okay.
But
that sounds cool.
A lot of Cars Maki's direction and style is cribbed from Wes Anderson, which is why I think you'll really like it. There's a lot of Wes Anderson in these films. Well, there's a lot of Cars Maki in Wes Anderson films.
Right. Wes Anderson is not a time traveler.
No, absolutely not.
Not and, that we know of.
And Cars Maki's still kicking. He directed The
yeah,
Man Without a Past.
This is 1990 when this came out, right?
He directed the Oscar-nominated The Man Without a Past, but didn't win. He also boycotted the ceremony because he disagreed with George W. Bush's war policies at the time.
What does that have to do with the Oscars, though?
Oh, absolutely not. Oh, well, okay. He didn't want to come to America.
Oh, all right. Well, I understand that. Yes. I don't want to come there, and I live there.
So, yeah, that's what I recommend. The Shadows in Paradise, Ariel,
how'd
and
you come across
the Match
this?
Factory Girl. Another podcast.
Just, stop it.
I know.
Listen,
God, Jeff.
Other
stop getting joy out of movies and podcasts.
We have to only
the very thing we're doing.
Only listen to stuff about existens.
With that, it's time to kill ourselves.
Nice and loud over there, piano guy.
He's turning it down.
Yeah, he turned the volume down on his piano. His baby grand has a volume knob.
I'm saying
on it.
He, but wait, this week the piano's being played by Whoopi Goldberg.
Oh. Well,
celebrity piano.
You take work where you can get it.
That's right. Whoopi. Nice eyebrows, girl. Get it.
And Curtis Mayfield and Robert Loggia are here. Guys, we don't have enough money
Sorry,
to pay you both.
We don't have work for you.
It's like how we pay them in peanuts.
That we
like,
threw on the
like
floor.
Like elephants.
Yeah, it's like the Lone Star Steakhouse.
Yeah.
Our table's ready. Table for three.
Hey, what do we got coming up this week?
What do we have? Review of the Box Trolls.
Well, I was hoping for something better than that.
Well, I will be seeing The Equalizer on Tuesday.
I was hoping for something better than that.
Sorry, Jeff.
I will be seeing Skeleton Twins, starring Bill Hader and Kristen Wiig.
And I will be seeing Alexander and the No Good Rotten whatever it is.
Rotten Tomatoes. So what other shows can you listen to, kids?
Can I plug my other podcast about movies?
Yeah, what's it called?
It's called Godfellas. We review Martin Scorsese.
I don't understand what you're doing.
From a Christian point of view.
Ah, sounds delightful. Anti-Flan Boy.
Ah, yes.
You can find them at antifanboy.com.
It's so weird how they have a different URL.
I don't understand it. But they review flan from various Mexican
Is
restaurants.
Is it a cake? Is it a pie?
Is it Jell-O? Is it pudding? We don't know.
It's a mystery.
Joystick Jerks at joystickjerks.com.
They are jerks, too, aren't they?
They are. They stole my girlfriend.
How mean.
They do a show about video games, and it's pretty funny and crude.
Do they talk about Existenz, the video game film on that show?
No, they don't. Hopefully. Hopefully not.
We could do a double feature. Team up with them. And then they'll lose all their listeners like we're going to.
Also, morelikeradio.com. That's a place where you can go to listen to 1,300 podcasts.
Yeah, all of them about the same thing.
The 1,300s.
Yes. And also, while you're at it, go to our site. It's cutprintfilm.com. We put a lot of work into that.
Yeah,
for no one.
We just got a few more writers.
Yeah.
And, we're excited. Hey, calm down there, Whoopi.
Jesus, you leaned hard on that F sharp.
It was me turning the knob up.
Don't ruin the illusion.
I think that's about it.
No more Cronenberg.
Yeah, next week it's strictly Roman Polanski.
Yes, we're going to have some Russian hands and Roman fingers.
Ooh, I
Cronenberg,
like it.
You're Donenberg. Dunenberg.
Oh my goodness.
Gonenberg?
Good night and good luck. Gonenberg.